Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only four-time Oscar nominee, two-time Golden Globe winner, Marsha Mason.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon.
Yeah, whatever time it is.
Whatever time.
And the reason she's here is because we're talking about Watch on the Rhine at Arena Stage now through March 5th. I gotta say, the Arena Stage folks are here. You guys are so awesome bringing people in. Kathleen Turner came in and was sitting right there. Mark Helgenberger was there for another Lillian Hellman play, Little Foxes. And now we have the latest, Watch on the Rhine, which is part of the larger Lillian Hellman series. Before we dive into the actual play, talk about why it's so cool that Arena's doing this tribute to Hellman.
Well, I think you have to really give Molly Smith. She is just one of the best artistic directors in the country. And she has great vision, and she really thinks about it. And it was her idea. And about a year and a half ago, we did a reading of both the Little Foxes and Watch on the Rhine to see what they sounded like, you know, around a table. And then she put together this fabulous festival. And then also the readings of some of the other Lillian Hellman material has been done all through the festival, and it's free. So it's really great what she's done. It's really terrific. And she's a strong proponent of women in theater, and we need that kind of strength and focus.
Absolutely. Okay, let's dive into the show.
Okay.
You and I know what it's about, but let's say our listeners might not. Give them just a quick premise.
All right. Watch on the Rhine was also a movie as well as a Broadway show originally in 1940. It is a play that Lillian Hellman wrote about the rise of fascism in Germany at that time. And America's position at that time was much more isolationist. So I play Fanny Farrelly, a character who comes from the Washington social scene. Her husband was an ambassador and lecturer, and her whole family has been in that part of the, you know, D.C. social environment.
So you'll recognize yourself on stage, audience members.
And she sort of represents America. And then there's the other leading character, Kurt, who is an anti-fascist from Germany, and he's married my daughter, and I haven't seen them for 20 years, and they have three children, and they're coming home because things are getting very difficult in Europe. And the play balances out the suspense because there is a third character, Tech DeBrancovis, who is played by Tony, and he is ostensibly the villain, if you will, because he's willing for a price to give Kurt's identity away. So we have a suspenseful, political, domestic, and there's a lot of humor in it as well. So I think there's a little bit for everybody.
Absolutely. But as you're describing, it's like Hitchcock's Notorious.
That's right.
Yeah, you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. Talk about, because it was written before, it was 1941 it came, so we weren't even in the war yet.
Actually, I think she originally wrote it in 39.
Okay.
Then it was produced, I think, on Broadway by Mr. Shumlin in 1940. And then the movie was done probably right after that.
Wow. 41. Talk about how the fact that it was written and no one knew the outcome of what was going to happen. I think of that.
No.
What's that line in Casablanca when he's like, yeah, it's December 41 and I bet everyone's sleeping in America. No,
yeah.
it's the same kind of deal. Everybody, uncertain times.
Well, and also what, in terms of the research that I did and that the dramaturg provided for us, what was really interesting was the U.S. position. They didn't really want to go into the war. And just serendipitously, sometimes when I come home after the play at night, I can't go to sleep right away. And so I was trolling through Netflix, and Foyle's War, which was a series about what was happening in England during exactly the same time. Mm. So I started watching sections, episodes of that, and it was very interesting to get this different, because even in Foyle's War, they talk about America's hesitancy. And also, what they also did is they didn't really tell the American public what was really going on in Europe. We didn't really understand. And because of the Treaty of Versailles, mm-hmm. we also were partly responsible for the devastation that happened to Germany, which did give the rise to Hitler. So it's a very interesting, complex period. But the thing that's so extraordinary about it is there's a line in the show that gets applause every single night that we do it because it is so contemporary to what's happening today.
What's the line?
The line is about we don't turn away refugees.
Right.
Yeah.
Watch for the line in Watch on the Rhine. It is very tight. Go into more about that Americans were reluctant to get involved in isolationists. Remind me of that Winston Churchill quote. Is Americans always do the right thing after exhausting all the other possible options. Talk about how it is relevant. I mean, with the refugees, you know, caution against fascism.
Oh, totally. I mean, we have to be really, really careful. And we have to demand from the journalists the truth about what's really happening everywhere. It's very difficult now because we do have fake news, but there are a lot of resources at our feet that they didn't have in those days. And we have to become more active. And that's really the issue. There's a line, also another line in the play, where Kurt says to me in great frustration, "Madame Fanny," he says, "it is no longer the world you knew." And so the arc of my character and my family, my son and my daughter, is that we become aware and informed, and we have to take a stand. And will we, is the question.
Right,
you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Who plays your Kurt? And what's it like working with him?
Oh, Andrew Long, who was an artist in residence at the Shakespeare Theater, as well as he's worked here at the Arena before. He's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful actor. He's been on Broadway, and he's done a great deal of regional theater. A lot of the younger actors, one in particular, Thomas Keegan, said his father, who is also an actor, said, "If you want to learn really good acting, then watch Andrew Long." And it's absolutely true.
I just giggled to myself because Thomas Keegan's father, James, was the antagonist in my thesis film at American University. Yeah, I cast
really?
Him. So I know Thomas and James really well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas plays my son David in it, and he's terrific, too. We have such a strong cast. It was really nice. One of the ladies out front who had been to see it said that was what was also so terrific, is the cast, the ensemble, is so strong. And you don't get a chance to see these kinds of plays very often because it is so big. We have 11 people, three children, and we're all on the stage at the same time in the second act. So that's quite a phenomenon.
So is it mostly set here in D.C.?
In a very sort of luxurious mansion kind of house out in Maryland.
Right.
Yeah. I've always been here. My daughter is the one that went overseas and married Kurt, the Andrew Long character, and she hasn't been back for 20 years. And she feels as strongly as he did and helps him with his work. And I was very rigid about their coming together early on. And so we haven't seen each other. We've written each other. Mm. But there is a tapestry of conflicting personality issues that's totally universal to mother and daughter. So, having two daughters myself, I know. So,
you know what that's
I mean, it's, and also philosophically, you know, Fanny comes from a world that is no longer or is about to come apart, really.
Which speaks to the line you just mentioned
exactly.
The world is not like you knew it.
Yeah.
When did you see the Bette Davis version, the movie?
I saw it a long time ago on, you know, TMC or whatever, probably. But I decided not to watch the movie. I probably am going to watch it now that we're open and I feel strong about what I'm doing. But I didn't want to, because I know some of the other actors did. And I know that the script is quite a bit different from the play. So I just figured, okay, I'll get myself settled in, know what I'm doing, and then I'll watch. Because God knows, Bette Davis is pretty phenomenal. And Lisa Bonneau is playing her role, the role of the Sarah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think the movie, the script was adapted by Dashiell Hammett, who was...
is that right?
Yeah, the screenplay. He adapted Hellman, his wife, her play into the screenplay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that. That's great.
I bring that up because the husband-wife collaboration thing, you and Neil Simon, for many, many years, your first husband.
Yeah.
Just talk about what was that like on your experience, and how do you think that might help Lillian and Hammett?
Well, Neil and I had a phenomenal relationship, personally as well as professionally. And not a lot of married couples can work together, but I guess because we both had such respect for each other's talent, he for mine and mine for his. We had the best time. We just had the best time working together. We really, really enjoyed it. We had a wonderful time, and we shared, 10 really nice years together, so it was good.
Well, he wrote 3 of your 4 Oscar nominations, right?
Yeah.
So that, I'd say that's a good... All right, cool. If you'll indulge me, just while we came up on that, let's go through some of your movies real quick, and then we'll bring it back around to watch on the run.
Okay.
Well, I guess first it was on Broadway, Good Doctor.
Yes.
Memories. We'll rapid fire them.
Well, that's how we met, actually.
Yeah.
And
you and Neil.
Yeah. I came to audition, and I thought maybe I would get a call back, and I got back to my agent's office, and they said, oh, you're hired. So I thought, oh, wow, that's unusual. So I showed up on October the 3rd, I remember, for the first day of rehearsal, and we were all seated around a big table that was actually on the stage of the O'Neill Theater, which he happened to own at the time. And during the break or whatever, after we had read it, he came around the back of my chair and put his hands on my shoulder and my shoulders, and I reached up and just patted his hand, and it was such a shockingly familiar thing. It really unnerved me. I had to excuse myself and go to the ladies' room and go, wow, what was that?
What was that?
Like a whole frisson or something, it was really weird. And so we wound up just being chemically attracted to one another instantly. And his daughters, his daughters said, well, why don't you take out Marcia? And we won't, tell our friends and stuff. They had lost their mother to cancer just a few months before. And so we met there on October the 3rd, and we were married 3 weeks later.
Wow. Whirlwind romance.
Yeah. Well, the girls really were instrumental in a way, because they said, well, why doesn't she move in and we won't tell our friends you're not married? So, and they were 9 and 15 at the time. So,
nice.
Yeah, it was lovely.
That's awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Working with James Caan.
Yeah.
Cinderella Liberty.
Yep.
First Globe win and first Oscar nomination, right? That whole whirlwind.
That was another whirlwind, too. I didn't plan that. I never thought I would be in the movies. And I was actually at ACT in San Francisco doing repertory work as an actor. And he came. What happened was I did Bloom and Love, and it was in the process of being edited by Paul Mazursky, the director. So, and he gave me this big, sort of supporting role. So Mark called him up to look at some footage of another actor in the movie. And he didn't think that person was right or something. So he was talking to Mark, and Paul was talking to Mark and Rydell. And he said, let me show you some rough footage of this gal that she's up in San Francisco now. So he looked at it, and he came up and saw me in, I think, Dal's house with Jimmy Caan, and I met them afterwards. And then I read the play, the movie, and auditioned for Mark, and we talked, and I wound up getting it. And then they liked it so much, 20th Century Fox liked the picture so much, and they really felt very strongly about the performances for both of us, that they rushed it out that year. So I wound up having two pictures come out in the same year and getting nominated. And all the while, I couldn't go to the Golden Globes because I was doing The Good Doctor. So Mark accepted it for me.
That's great. Yeah, this was like a year after Godfather for him, right?
Yes.
So yeah. This is like peak James Caan.
That's so great. And then he came out with The Gambler, and I think he got a nomination on that one also.
Man, this the people you've worked with is blowing my mind.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Richard Dreyfuss, Goodbye Girl. Acting off of you, he wins his Oscar, and I think you won a Globe for that.
Yeah,
so, man, that experience. Herbert Ross.
Yeah, it was fabulous. What was really interesting is we had another script. It was called Bogart Slept Here, and Neil wanted to do a reading of it. And Ray Stark, the producer, said, okay, well, we'll pull it together. And so Dreyfuss and I read this material. And Neil listened to it, and we just had, again, Dreyfuss and I had this great chemistry. Mm-hmm. We just always have it, and we have it to this day. If we see each other, or we wound up going to London to do Prisoner of Second Avenue together, mm-hmm. And we just have great, great acting chemistry together. So Neil said afterwards, he said, okay, I know what's wrong with the material. Now, but I can fix it. And so Bogart Slept Here sort of ended where it started, I think, where The Goodbye Girl ends.
Okay.
So he flipped it around because it was really about, Bogart Slept Here was to be sort of loosely around the way it was Dustin Hoffman and Mike Nichols, with The Graduate. Mm-hmm. So the story of Bogart was about this family with a couple of kids this struggling actor goes to Hollywood and becomes famous. So instead, what became The Goodbye Girl is, this struggling actor comes to New York, meets this single mother, and the movie ends with him getting the part and going to Hollywood.
Okay, I got it. That's funny. It's called Bogart Slept Here because didn't Herbert Ross, your director... He did Play It Again, Sam, with Woody Allen. So there's the Bogart. All right, cool. Yep. See, we're all tying it in. Oh, but that's awesome. Great film. All right, well, we'll have to go faster to get through these other ones. But worked with Caan again for Chapter 2.
Third Oscar nomination. Wonderful. Yeah, that was a good experience.
Ned Beatty, Susan Clark, Promises in the Dark.
Yes.
And then fourth Oscar nom for Only When I Left, Joan Hackett won a Globe opposite for you. What is it with these people winning by working with you? You have the secret sauce.
Oh, I don't know. We'll see.
but that's great.
We had a great time. And that picture was Only When I Left is one of my favorites because it's really an ensemble piece with all those actors. Yeah. So it was really great. I've had a really spectacular career, I mean, it's really good. And there was a picture I did called Drop Dead Fred that winds up constantly getting revived, and they're thinking of doing a remake of it and all kinds of stuff. So I've been very lucky.
Very lucky. Speaking of lucky, do you feel lucky? Clint Eastwood, Heartbreak Ridge.
Yeah. I think I'm probably the only woman that ever slapped Clint Eastwood. I got to slap him.
You got to slap him. All right. Well,
he was great to work with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Yeah.
Totally.
He directed
it too. And
he directed it. Now, just very quickly, I'll tell you a great story about him. He was standing waiting for a shot to get set up, and we were on a dance floor, and we had to move around, and they were using, the camera, and he had lines. So we start the scene, and we're dancing, and we're saying the dialogue, and the camera's moving around. And I can tell that he's pushing me in certain ways. And so after the called cut, he said, I was watching the play of light across your face to make sure we got a nice shot. So he was acting and directing and dancing all at the same time.
That's so
wild. It was really cool.
It takes a true talent to do that.
Yeah, it does.
Well, all right, bringing it back to Watch on the Rhine. Who directs you here?
Jackie Maxwell, who was the artistic director of the Shaw Festival at Lake on the Niagara, and she's just one of the best. Mm. I mean, her work in this play is phenomenal because we are in the round, And we have, like I said, 11 people, and that is not easy. And one a lovely woman who's an actor here came and saw the show, and she moved around, you know, in the theater. She said, in every area you could, nobody was blocked. Mm. It was really wonderful. And she was so good with the kids and with us. And we, since it's such a large cast, we often work a little differently. Each person has their own technique or their own process. And she manages to find a way to communicate to all of us so that we delivered this really strong performance, I feel. And it's totally because of her.
Speaking of her directing you, what do you appreciate the most about the director in the rehearsal process? What do you like, a director that knows everything down pat, or do you like a little more loose improvisation, or what sort
It'll depend more on the material that you're doing, you know. For example, I deferred to Michael Caine in everything when I did All's Well, because my experience with Shakespeare had been quite long ago and not that much.
Right.
So you want to have somebody help you find what is really right and true. And yet, at the same time, they make you feel secure and comfortable and that what you're doing is good. And Jackie was amazing that way, too. So, I mean, you're really blessed with the theater community here.
Yeah.
You have all these wonderful theaters and these great actors. It's really terrific.
Have you done anything at Arena before? Or
no,
any of the other local theaters in D.C.?
Just the Shakespeare and now Arena.
But, well, welcome back.
Thank you. Well, I look forward to going to see these other theaters, you know, Woolly Mammoth and some of the other ones. And through the actors, I hear all about them, and they just sound wonderful. And the talent pool here is just quite wonderful.
Yeah.
Really great.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, if any of our listeners have been hearing this nice, awesome, generous half-hour interview, what's the final sound to get them to come out? Why should they come?
Oh, I think it's so important to see good material. And Lillian Hellman has written a well-plotted, strong, funny, deep, subtle political play. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's great. I think you're going to really be, you will have missed something if you don't see it, truly.
That's a rare gift to be able to see a show that's funny, like you say, and entertaining, but also is teaching you something cautioning something.
That's right.
Social commentary.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the characters are complex. They're not two-dimensional. You know, they're full out. They're filled with complexities and contradictions, which I think is really the best.
Absolutely. Because we as humans, that's how we are.
We're
all complex. All right. Marsha Mazin, you're just awesome. Thanks for joining us. Again, it's Watch on the Rhine at Arena Stage now through March 5th. Go see it. Our editor, Judy Taub, just saw it, I think, the other night and was raving about it, and you will too. Go. Thanks.
Thank you.